How's Work is an unscripted one-time counseling session focused on work. For the purposes of maintaining confidentiality, names, employers, and other identifiable characteristics have been removed. But their voices and their stories are real.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed, on YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
So I'm going to listen to each of you, see if I can discern your voices, the voices of identical twins.
Well, we'll see if she can figure it out. Okay.
Let's go.
So I'm older, 30 seconds older. We always like dressed the same, like played the same sport.
It was just us. Like we just were so content, happy being with each other. So it's kind of like the creepy twins you like see in movies.
Yes, so one of you has a deeper voice than the other.
My guess is you have the deeper voice. Yes.
They started doing business together in their teens in small town Texas.
We were 14. Yeah, we started detailing cars. My parents told us if we wanted a car that we would have to pay for it by ourselves.
What made it flow for me was like, there was not one of us in charge and one of us as a follower.
True.
They've had three businesses since then, and they're still in their 20s. They've asked for the session because they've been getting into more and more power struggles.
I don't know if it's going to work for us to work together without us just like fighting like crazy.
The way they understand it is that one is the natural born business person. He has the talent. He knows to command the room, and the other doesn't seem to pull his weight.
Put me in a room of businessmen to pitch an idea or try to raise money, I'm like shutting down.
There has been such an investment as a unit, inseparable, identical twins.
I think it's even gone to the point of like, if we wanted to get married, our partners probably won't ever understand us like the other one does.
But there is more to this story.
One of the big differences that's like observable is that I'm gay and he's straight.
Differences of identity have impacted not just their personal relationship, but their business relationship in ways that they have never spoken to or admitted to each other. So before we go actually in the muck, give me a tiny bit more. You know, what is the kind of the general broader culture that you grew up in?
So the context we grew up in was extremely, extremely evangelical Christian. We didn't know anything different. I got pretty sucked into church here that was just very, very, very divisive in that realm. Just kind of hateful, honestly. And then he came out as gay. And all of a sudden, it was like protection mode. I'm thinking of the past 6 years. That's kind of my context for this. Broader background is a very Christian background, broken away from that. And he's had people really come after him pretty aggressively in a hateful way. That's the context. I'm trying to get straight into all the muck. Okay, I'm done.
I feel similarly. I think what I was going to add on is I think the context is like we saw a right way to be, like look, present yourself, the type of work you do and everything like that. So it was a lot of the same. You know, my dad, successful, was kind of like in that circle of people. And so my culture for like what it looked like to be successful or a man was very, I had to be that certain way. So I would say that's definitely what we absorbed for a really long time. And that's kind of been turned upside down in the last 3 years. Our family just has completely come behind me after coming out as gay, like so supportive. I don't even remember telling them because it was so not a big deal. I think our family as a result has lost a good number of friends since then. So I think the culture that we grew up in is, I don't feel like we belong in it anymore.
I agree. We also, that's one of the reasons I think we've become so tight. We've always been tight, but whenever we feel outnumbered, you know, we always have each other to go to. I still feel like I'm hyper aware and hyper protective from maybe the past 6 years, which I think might have caused some issues.
And why is it 3 years and 6 years?
I'm saying 6 years because that's about the time since we graduated from college. And
So I've been like comfortably out open gay for 3 years, but the questioning, the first 3 years was probably a lot of more questioning. And I think
I think I've just understood something. But tell me if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. While your brother is thinking about what he wants to do and what's going to be the next business, you're figuring out who you're going to be.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Because I have felt like behind, like if he's here and I'm here, I feel like I'm trying to catch up. But that makes a lot of sense because, I mean, I was forced to consider so many things that maybe you haven't had to.
You are in the midst of confusion, in the midst of measuring the risks of what it means to come out as gay in the middle of a Christian evangelical family and culture. He's thinking, what do I want to do next? And you're thinking about, what am I going to be next?
Yes. Wow. That, I mean, even from my perspective, that feels extremely accurate because I felt very, very torn because I'm thinking, I want to go do this and I want to build this. And then I also know that all the crazy stuff that you're having to go through. And so I felt like I'd put all that on hold or give it away because I knew all the stuff you were going through.
Because you had free energy.
I did.
Your psychic energy was available.
Yeah.
His psychic energy was taken up with secrecy, with being closeted, with the fear of rejection, the fear of excommunication, et cetera, et cetera. When you've got so much psychic energy taken up for that, you're not as available to think about what's going to be the next gig.
Oh my gosh. That, yes, because I mean, I'm even thinking about like, it's generally him that comes to me with a business idea for us. And I mean, wonder if you agree.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And I can't think of a time where it's been opposite, like a legitimate business idea where I've come to you.
Yeah. We're talking like more than just a one-off idea. We're talking about, let's pursue this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so.
And has that been okay? Or was it interpreted as he's better at business? He has a better knack. He's the real one. You're the follower. He's the leader. I mean, that may be true, but there's a reason for this. He's free to think about ideas because he's got nothing else that's important to be thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, you're trying to think about, am I going to keep my family? Is my mother going to be upset? My dad going to be upset? You know, my community, what price will my family pay? What price will my brother pay? Who can think about the next business when you're busy with all of that?
Oh, my, totally. I mean, wow. I just.
But say this in your own words, because I'm just throwing this out there. You tell me your experience in your own words, or tell it to him, because I'm not sure that that's even something you guys have ever really talked about.
Yeah.
Probably not.
I mean, I think you are so naturally gifted with business and you have the education to back it up, and I don't. And then, you know, on top of that, just kind of thinking about like the culture question, I think I imitated you a lot because you looked and sounded like, and I mean, we looked the same, but you know, like you fit in way easier with those people. And so, I mean, I think as a result, I kind of just have imitated you in certain business scenarios, because it's hard for me. You know, I think I have this feeling that like if a businessman knows I'm gay, they're like not going to want to do any business with me. And so I just have felt like there's no way for me to be successful without you here.
Yeah, that's, I'm
just let this land on you for a sec.
Okay. Thinking about that, and I'm thinking how I have interpreted that. I think the language that we used was like follower, right? Or that like one of us has these gifts, the other is kind of the one following. It's weird because I've known the context that you were in with all of that. I don't know why it's hitting me a little differently now, but maybe I'm just starting to grasp how horrible of a time that was for you. That I hate to say it, but and that is how I have interpreted it. As you know, I come to you with, let's do this, let's do this, this, this. You need to take this task. I'll take this task. We'll do, you know, go about it this way. I've taken that as you don't really, it's not really like a huge interest of yours. It's not something you really care about too terribly much. That's for sure caused me hesitation. But now I'm sitting here thinking, maybe I misinterpreted this whole thing.
I mean, I don't want to overlook either like the idea that, you know, you have the education and I think I can fake it, but I feel like I have to be you. I think what I'm saying is I have no idea how I would ever go into a room and raise money from like a group of successful looking men at a bank without you there. And I'm sure that feels like, I would guess that feels like a lot of pressure.
For years, they thought one of them is the talent, the natural born business guy, and the other one just didn't have much to contribute. And so one feels like he's doing it all, and the other one feels like no matter what he brings, it's never really valued. But as I listen to them, it becomes much more clear to me that maybe this is not just an issue of power, and more the consequences of identity. This is a question. I don't know how to be, because if I was me, I don't think they would want to do business with me. So I have to imitate you. If therefore, or maybe, question mark, if I was me and knew that that would not become a cause for them not wanting to work with me, maybe I wouldn't shut down. Maybe I don't shut down because I don't have the knack for it, even though I may be interested in other things, etc. But maybe I shut down because I realize that very, very early on, I've learned that, you know, this thing called being a gay man isn't going to get me business. So, of course, I shut down. And then I try to think, how do I do what you do? That's not the only thing. But basically, if you can't be who you are, you have to be somebody.
Yeah, I know.
And since you have him so close to you, the easiest one to imitate is him.
Right. I mean, especially like this idea that we're like a unit, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, we look the same. We sound similar. People think we're the exact same. So like, I think of course I would imitate you.
I mean, at the same time you were imitating me, I was imitating people trying to figure out who I was too. Does that make sense?
Mm-mm.
So I guess my point is I was completely making it up. Like,
yeah, like every young person does.
Yeah.
that is part of the, you know, you're looking at the business dudes and thinking, you know, that's what they do. I'm going to copy that. And he looks at you and he says, I'm going to copy that, you know. But he thinks you've got it figured out because you at least know who you are and you don't have to hide it. So he thinks you sound so confident.
Yeah.
And you're saying, I've got the confidence of a 23-year-old, which means I'm arrogant.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, some people, when they're shy, shut down. And some people, when they don't feel very confident, they become more arrogant to compensate for it. So you went in those two directions.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm saying this, I'm well aware that this is not just a matter of individual differences. His threat detector is not mistaken when it tells him that the businessman in the room would probably not give him a penny if they knew he was gay. It's not just shyness, it's shyness in the backdrop of homophobia, including that of his closest person, his twin brother. There is a possibility also, especially you are studying something completely different, you're studying human behavior and human psychology, that maybe you're not as interested. And would that be okay? Must you work together? Must you do business 5, 6, and 7 together? Are there other ways that you can do some of them and not all of them? Can you have separate careers? That's a question too.
Yeah, that is like, I feel like that is the question. And, you know, I think I'm a little afraid of that question of, am I less interested in this? Because I think if I'm being completely honest, I think I am less interested. Part of me is like, I want to become a therapist. And then it's like, well, then what is it, where does that leave me? I hate saying this, but I'm terrified you're going to make a lot more money than me. And I'm nervous that if we were to part ways, that I'm going to get like left behind.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
One sec. If you are a successful business guy and you make much more money, I am left behind because I become a therapist. Which is, by the way, what I do. You know, I don't consider myself left behind, but what exactly are you saying? Of course, if you want to make money, never become a therapist. That is not a way to be rich. You can survive but no, and live okay, but no, it's not business, that's for sure. You don't become a therapist to make money, but that doesn't mean you're left behind. What does that expression mean for you?
That is such a good question. I think feeling left behind would be like looking back and having a regret that I didn't end up making a decision to work with you. And I mean, honestly, I think left behind to me feels like I don't make as much money. Mm-hmm. And I know that doesn't even make sense.
Well, unpack it a little bit. Talk about money. We've already talked about sex. We can talk about money, and then we talk about death. We'll have covered all three.
That's true. Yeah, we'll cover it all. I think we each have maybe a complicated relationship with money. My family didn't struggle for it growing up. Like, that wasn't a thing that we like had issues with. I do think that maybe the people we were around, like, oh, it sounds so basic, but like, it seems to me like some of my memories of the happiest people we were around had a lot of money.
Did you learn that you are more valued if you have more bills in your pocket?
I think my dad had the idea that I would go to business school as well, or that I would go to law school as well. And I knew early on I really didn't want to do that, but you were doing it. And so I thought I should do it. But I remember like conversations that I had about like, no, I actually think I want to go to become a therapist. And it would always turn back to like, well, you know, you want to basically the idea, like you want to make sure that you're set up to do well. Mm-hmm. And I think that like enough conversations of that made me second guess so much going this direction, which is probably why I'm, you know, could have gone when I was 22 and now I'm 29, almost.
It was always like no questions asked of why you wanted to do that. Like no interest regarding the whole profession and what that could look like. It was always, you know, maybe you should go to business school too. Mm-hmm. So that you can learn how to make money through it, or Yeah, it was never really focused on.
Yeah, and I think you were getting like all the attention. You were like, you started getting like more questions asked or like interest shown towards you.
Yeah, 100%. I did.
What kind of questions?
Questions that you would, that I would think of in a conversation that's engaging, like, well, how would you see this going? Or, you know, how would you see this developing?
So you
over
get
this?
The attention because your father can relate to what you do.
100%.
And so he talks with you. He's interested. He has ideas and et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
Whereas you, he doesn't know what this is about.
Well, I think it's probably worth noting that, like, when I told him I got into business school, they're like screaming over the phone, jumping, so excited. And when I got into therapy school, they were excited, but it was definitely a different reaction.
Definitely a different reaction.
Yeah.
It's not just that one son was more talented or skilled than the other. It's also that the talents of one son were more valued than the other, simply because the apple fell closer to the tree. And so if therapy had been valued similarly as being a business person or going to law school, both children would have grown up with the sense that they are both talented. It's hard to say this is what I want when you're faced with a family who may not appreciate that choice and you care about their reaction.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Jury selection continues this week in a Manhattan courtroom where former President Donald Trump is on trial for falsifying business records. Prospective jurors were asked 42 questions aimed at determining whether they can be fair and impartial, such as, can you be fair and impartial? Have you ever been a Boogaloo boy or in Antifa? And what podcasts do you listen to? Trump's required to be present in the courtroom for this trial that could last until June. And he's been talking to reporters before he goes into the courtroom.
I should be right now in Pennsylvania, in Florida, in many other states, North Carolina, Georgia, campaigning. This is all coming from the Biden White House because the guy can't put two sentences together. He can't campaign. They're using this in order to try and win an election.
Donald J. Trump in court this week on Today Explained, every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
I think I've just felt kind of stupid. I just feel like me going that route, 10 years on the road, I'm going to end up regretting it. And you're going to have had, you know, this great experience with business. And I'm going to like be just trying to make ends meet.
And you want to know how your brother reacted when you got into therapy school?
Yeah. How did you react?
Are we asking your observation or just me?
I can you. You.
Okay. I was thrilled. I mean, I think you know that, but I was thrilled. Correct me if this is wrong, but what I remember is that I've been telling you you should apply to this program and go for the past 3 years now. Right? Is that correct?
No, that's right. Yes.
Like, I mean, whenever in business stuff, I immediately call him if it has to do with instincts with people or anything like that. And because it really is what he is absolutely phenomenal at. And so, I mean, I was thrilled. I finally felt like you were doing what you had actually wanted to do for so long.
Yeah, you are. I can, like, if anything, you've been trying to talk me into actually doing it for a long time. And then I talk myself out with like all the things I'm considering.
Yeah.
That, you know, it would not be the most practical move.
I mean, to be fully honest, I feel like I've run a broker role or a middleman role between explaining to our parents that, no, this is actually the best thing. This would, he is built for this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, out of our immediate family, I'm for sure the only one.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah. No, I think you're the only one who, well, our mom, but yeah. Like, other than that, like, you're the only one who's shown like genuine curiosity for why, yeah, I want to do what I do.
Yeah.
Your brother says, anytime I start a business, even if you're not equal with me in terms of the actual structure of the business itself, whenever I have an interpersonal question, I turn to you. So that too has value in a business.
Right.
Okay. Value is measured by all kinds of criteria, contribution. You know, 50-50 may not just be about how many hours you put in and how many hours he puts in. Maybe it's about how you save a certain situation. Maybe it's about how you know who to hire and not hire. You know, lots of other pieces that create, that give a sense of equity and equality and fairness in your partnerships.
Yeah.
And if you're going to continue work together, maybe you won't be 50% in terms of the full business. You will have shares in every single one of them, parts of you, because you want to have other work that is not related just to the business. But you will need to think about the richness of possibilities about how you partner, rather than just, we're going in it, we both sweat the same way, we both invest the same amount of hours, we both, you know, it's not going to be about similarity. It's going to be about complementarity.
Hmm. That makes a ton of sense.
I said that I would call you if there was any sort of, you know, interpersonal people, mm-hmm, issue. Am I off on that? Because I saw a little, it seemed a little like,
oh,
am I off on that? This is my question.
No. I think you're off maybe on that. Maybe I don't feel like you consider that bringing value to the business. I feel like I'm just your like first call.
Oh no, that's not. No, that's not what I think. Is that why you thought that? Why you think that I'll call you, or am I missing something? In my head, am I thinking that I ask you for your opinion on stuff a lot more than I actually do?
That's a good question. I think you do ask me. No, you're not off. You do ask me, but it doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel like part of the business. It just feels like our relationship.
Okay.
So like in terms of it bringing value to the business, I wouldn't consider that.
Okay.
Or it didn't feel like that to me.
It's a very important thing that you've just discussed. Because what you're saying is, because talking about people and having relationship talks and having interpersonal understanding types of conversations is what we do as brothers, it doesn't feel like it's a full set of skills that I bring that contributes to the success of a business. Whereas your legal knowledge, that can be measured, quantified, separated, delineated. But psychological knowledge, that's part of what every relationship has. Therefore, it's what we just do as people and as brothers.
Yes.
I'm just laughing because it seems like... Go ahead.
No, I was about to interrupt you. Sorry.
No, go ahead. I didn't have anything to say.
I think you have more measurable knowledge than I do.
I do too. We were talking the other day about being in control on decision making and I feel like an asshole saying this. For the majority of things, I felt like I need to be in control. Like, for example, how do we expand? How do we raise money? All of that. I felt like I needed to be the one in control for that. And that hasn't really left much room for you.
Yes, I agree. I feel like you've tended to be in control. I would say like,
and I don't like that. I'm not trying to be like, I don't know.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I think I sometimes wonder if you had this instinct of being my twin, knowing that like, I had no idea how to show up in front of a group of men that intimidated me. And if like you might've, I wonder if you took on like a more of like the leader of us role early on and it's just hasn't like gone away.
I think I did, but we had never, it's something we'd never explicitly talked about until, I don't know, the past 6 months or something. It sounds like you, and I've observed, like, didn't really feel like you fit in with a lot of like guys who were, you know, we grew up with or in our class or played sports with or whatever. I guess for as long as I can ever remember, I felt in protective mode. Maybe a good way to explain it is this. Whenever he moved to go to therapy school, I don't know if I've told you this, I was sitting with my therapist talking and she asked, how is it? You know, how's it with him being gone? The way I explained it was, I feel like I've been like a mean dog protecting you from people here for a long time. I think it's become much more pronounced in our 20s, but even early on, whenever it was subtle, I always sensed
that he was slightly different. You didn't necessarily know why. And yes. You felt that he was more vulnerable and that you were the more conventional, conforming guy. And it wasn't a stretch for you to adapt yourself to the rules of the game and the norms that were expected. And so you wanted to protect him.
Exactly. I mean, for as long as I can remember, it's been like that. And I'm just tired. I'm tired of.
From protecting you, it became leading you.
Yes. That's, yeah.
Right? This is a tough conversation to have. And yeah. I think that much of this has ever been said between the two of you. And and you're doing good. You're doing fine. You know, the fear that if we put this all out there, what is this going to do to us? Your bond is so strong. You know, it will only get stronger.
Yeah.
So be okay. Honest.
Okay. So whenever I think about going ahead with business, this is the intersection I think of, is with all of the, I guess, discriminations, the best way I know how to word it, that you have faced, you always know where I'm going to land. I'm always going to go to bat for you. But I thought, what happens in the intersection of we're working together and you need protection? Let's say you need someone going to bat for you. And let's say that those, like, one is going to demand everything. You can't do both. And I know where I'm going to land every single time. Mm-hmm. I know I'm going to choose you every single time. And so when I think about that in the business context, I think, well, then is it easier for us to just not work together, to not complicate those things so that it's these goals I have aren't held back? I should feel like...
Well, be in a more accepting environment, maybe?
Yeah, being a more accepting environment. I mean, like, if it comes down to you versus the business, I will always choose you. And so it makes me think, well, then is it better for us not to work together so I don't have to choose, so that I can do both?
When I'm hearing him say, and which may be one of the hardest things for him to articulate, is, I love you. I will always protect you, but I'm not sure I want to work with you as a way to protect you. That being business partners has been as much about creating an anti-discrimination shield as it has been about creating ventures together.
I'm trying to think of a situation where it would be like, protect me versus the business. And I'm having trouble thinking about that, but I guess I'm wondering if it's more like you sense like it's going to be conflict or the, like, appease me in a conflict or business. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think the best way to explain this is with our second business. Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
No, it's fine.
With our second business that I had done for about 2 years by myself, he was going through a particularly, this was probably the window of time that was most difficult for you.
Yeah.
Just people coming after you. Like, I mean, it was awful.
Like being sent to conversion therapy in the same time that I'm trying to like run a business with him.
Yeah. I mean, and so
isn't it strange how people sometimes say some of the most painful things with laughter?
Oh yeah.
Like you just did.
I did. I'm doing it again.
I mean, I am cringing just hearing this.
Yeah. Because I talk about it and like I make jokes about it, but I mean, it was awful and it was like relentless.
I mean, it was, I think just you hear over and over and over again. I'm saying this from what I've observed hearing, but you've heard a thousand times more, you know, kill that part of yourself, kill this part of yourself, kill this part of yourself. This part of yourself should die. It's part, you know, and just, I think that I've had the luxury of not having that told to me every week.
Yeah, so you can think about business. He's thinking about surviving.
Yeah. And so it got to a point where I was, my mind can just run away. And so I was really worried about him. And so I just said, you know, just let's just half it. Let's half the business. You leave. He was working at a job that was awful. Just said, let's half it. And I guess that's the way I think of with that, with a scenario in the future where it's like, do I have to choose? Like, 'cause in that situation, I'm now realized I probably didn't have to choose, but it felt good. Ed.
What did you have to choose between what and what?
Between keeping full ownership of my company and going this route that I wanted to go, which was raising, you know, money and just a totally different route. And so I gave up half of that and then
gifted it to me
and gifted it to him. Just to, so we could, I mean, in my mind, I'm thinking, let's just like go do this together. Let's get you out of all this, you know, terrible situation that you're in. And then, it, you know, it also came down to decision power. I think it kind of split 50-50 and I did that. He never asked me to do it. And I think I have quietly, I hate saying this, I think I quietly resented that for a long time.
I feel kind of like an asshole saying this, but I think part of me is like, I didn't, you know, well, one, I mean, thank you. Like I don't feel like an asshole for saying that.
I don't even want you to say that.
But like beyond that, I never asked you to give me half of a business because you thought I was going to like go off the deep end. And mm-hmm.
What was your fear for him?
That he would die.
From?
Suicide. One of my closest friends in the world died in that exact same month of time.
With the same circumstances?
Not the exact same, but there's a lot of overlap. You know, I would just picture it, which is where my mind can run off. But
you pictured him taking his life?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. And it was...
Yeah.
You know, and so that sort of thing, it's like, I'll do. And it's, and I know you now I'm like, my mind ran away with this. So I want to be clear that it wasn't something where he's coming to me being like, this is, you know, I'm thinking about this, because that wasn't the case.
I understand you. It makes a lot of sense. You thought I need him close by. I don't want to lose him like I lost her. Mm-hmm. I know what he's facing, or I don't, but I have some vague idea of what he's facing when he's not saying it with laughter.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not telling you what he's facing because he, I don't know why actually. Why don't you tell? I mean, you didn't tell him what you were going through.
I don't be filtered on this.
He wasn't accepting at first when I came out to him, which is so interesting because, like, if I think of, like, biggest ally now, it's you. Mm. But it wasn't that case at the beginning. I think you were, like, shocked, or to me it felt like you were shocked and disappointed. And I remember at that time you told me, like, we should never work together again because you've been lying to me for however many years and I'm just finding out. I didn't actually tell him. He found out by coming across some messages with somebody. To me, it seemed like you felt so, like, it was like I lied to you.
Yeah, that's, I felt like, and I don't feel that way anymore, to clarify. But at the time I was just like, he's been lying to me. I can't.
And I think after that too, like, I didn't tell him stuff for probably another year or two, even though he already knew I was gay and all of that. I think I was just like,
yeah, I mean, you made a deliberate point for good reason to say you're cut out of this whole piece of my life. I'm not telling you anything. Don't ask me. I'm not going to answer.
Yeah. I forget about all that.
Yeah. So, I mean, for about a year and a half, I guess, you know, you made the call to cut me out completely. Mm-hmm. So, and that's all in that time where, you know, I said, let's split the business, and then resentment slowly building up. It's like, it feels like I would just flip back and forth between being like, why did I do, like, just resenting that, and then being like, I need to do everything I can to make sure he's okay. And it was just like almost hour to hour flip.
So basically, one of them says to the other, I'm gay. And the first reaction is, why have you never told me? You lied to me. And then the other one says, well, if I can't talk to you and you resent me for it, then I'm not going to tell you anything. And then this one becomes aware of the challenges that the other one is going through with reform therapy and the danger that his brother lives with. And he realizes, he's got only me. I'm the only one who can save him and protect him. And I don't want to lose him like I lost my friend. But then he gives him half the business, which he then resents because he experiences it as the only way to make sure that he can protect him. And everything gets all mixed up. Is he the only one with dark corners? Or do you have your own?
Oh my, yeah, I have my own.
Can we put those a little bit on the table too? So that you get a better understanding together of some of your vicious fights or intense fights. They may not be vicious, but they can get really intense.
Intense, yeah.
Partly because they sit on all kinds of detonators.
Yeah.
And he's not the only one that has a detonator. You have some too.
Yeah. So 6 months after my friend died from suicide, I was a rafting guide and was involved in an accident. An 11-year-old kid drowned. And quite a bit of feeling responsible for that. And so, I mean, I came home to this business that needed to be run.
Were you responsible or not?
I'm sorry?
Were you responsible?
No. I've been honestly in therapy since it happened, and I'm comfortable enough with that.
Okay.
Now, I mean, for, you know, the immediate 3 years after, I was like, this is my fault. I could have changed it. More so, I could have changed it. That was what I just felt so intensely. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I came back. I've since learned a lot about trauma and going through that. A lot of those months and the year after just feel completely dark. Like, I don't even remember a lot of it. It was awful. And, I mean, you took care of everything. Yeah. Business-wise, but I don't know why this is the first time I'm actually thinking of that piece. Like, I honestly don't even remember the rest of that year. You know, it was awful. And then I think there's
sit with this just one sec. Let this sink in just one sec.
So, I mean, now I'm sitting here thinking, like, that's when you took care of me. I feel like I had taken care of you for, well, maybe did a shitty job of it, but like, that's, I think that's like when you actually took care of me and took care of the entire business.
What's it like for you to hear him say this?
Oh, that makes me, and I'm like sitting here honestly trying not to get, I'll cry if I need to, but oh, it makes me sad. That's really sad, because I look back and remember how anxious and how depressed and how like intense those could feel at times, but those feel like incidental. I guess what I'm saying is, like, yes, I think I did take care of you a lot that year, but it didn't feel like much of a burden.
But you had an accident on the job. Right?
Yes.
That's basically, and you felt very, very guilty and responsible for the death of this child. So you had been able to save your brother, but not this kid.
Yeah, and it was all within 6 months that all of this happened. Probably the most pronounced thing I remember about that year following was just like, you know, I could not, I would go to sleep and I would dream about it. I'd wake up, I'd think about it. There's just no escape from it. It kind of felt like one of my only escapes was business, just to focus on this stuff, but it would still follow me there. And then I would just get, you know, go into this hole and go off the grid for 4 weeks at a time or something.
But see, here's the thing. You, Mr. Businessman, who in your mind think, I'm always doing more. I know it better. I've got that natural talent. You then say, I gave it to him. And you completely forget that for a year or more, he's running it. And because he constantly thinks that what he has to offer isn't substantive enough and doesn't have enough business value, and he's constantly trying to prove to you that he's worthy of being your partner in business, I'm not talking in life. For a long time, he accepts the language of you gifted this to him. I mean, the company, all in all, how many years did it last? If he took care of it for a year and a half, then there was only another year and a half where you did more.
Yeah.
It's not like this is a 20-year business in which he did a year of leadership, right? But your concept of I do more and his concept of I don't do enough are married together.
That's really interesting. What do you think?
I need to think about it. What do you think?
I mean, I'm relating to what was just said on my part.
Yeah.
Like trying to work my way to where it feels like I guess equal value.
We think we have power struggles, but in fact, we're afraid of loss.
I relate a lot to that.
What we're really fighting about is how do we find a better way to stay together? Because I don't want to lose you.
Yeah. Okay. That feels really.
It's not about power. It's about loss.
Oh, yeah.
It's not about which position is better. It's about how do we find a way to stay together, but not in that kind of together. How do we continue to work together, but not like this?
Yeah.
So in a way you fight because that's a way to stay connected. If we fight, then we're involved with each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if we start about other ways to be involved with each other, we may not fight nearly as much about these things, because when it comes to strategy, on some level, he thinks you probably have a perfectly valid strategy. Maybe it's not the only one or the right one, but it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't care about the strategy. He cares about you caring about him.
Oh my God. That is like completely on target. I like, you know how I've kind of said, like, at times I felt erased by the business.
Yeah.
To me, I don't want to get like lost. I feel like I would like lose. I just feel like, yes, I feel like it's not a power struggle. It's a loss. Like if, like that I would lose, like just be erased from it.
Yeah.
I'm fumbling my words, but I think.
No, it makes sense to me. I mean, I'm thinking of fights we've had and the fight gets to the point where he's thinking, I'm out. I'm not going to do this anymore. Immediately. I'm like, no, we'll change it. Cause I don't want to work differently. I just want to be, well, honestly, a lot of it.
I want to be in charge and I want you next to me.
That is a very good way of putting it. Very articulate and accurate.
And he says, I don't want to be in charge and I want you next to me. It actually, it fits. Actually, it kind of fits, but you have to find formulas for it. And for that, you have to become flexible and try out a bunch of different things, knowing that the one that you have now isn't working so well. So as they leave this session, how can these two stay as close and as caring and protective of each other, but create a bit of a separation between what needs to be done as loving brothers who have such a powerful bond and business partners who are trying not to be cast in a bind?
Esther Perel is a therapist, best-selling author, speaker, and host of the podcasts Where Should We Begin? And How's Work? To apply with a colleague or partner to do a session for the podcast, or to follow along with each episode's show notes, go to howswork.estherperel.com. How's Work is produced by Magnificent Noise for Gimlet and Esther Perel Productions. Our production staff includes Eric Newsom, Eva Walchover, Huate Gatana, and Kristen Muller. Original music and additional production by Paul Schneider. And the executive producers of How's Work are Esther Perel and Jesse Baker. We would also like to thank Lydia Polgreen, Colin Campbell, Courtney Hamilton, Nick Oxenhorn, Sarah Kramer, Jack Saul, and the entire Esther Perel Global Media team.